The following presentation was recorded at the 2010 Conservative Anabaptist School Board Institute. More information at thedocforlearning.org.
So I want to greet all of you in Jesus' name this afternoon. It's a blessing to be here again, be back together after good lunch. When I looked at the schedule and I saw where my slot was, we commented about it that I've got the toughest period in the whole day. After lunch, you know. And so I just want to commit myself and work very hard at not going to sleep on you. So I want to try to do that. Meeting the special education needs of the individual student. To come to this time, I somewhat feel like a fish out of water or something like that. And I'd like to tell you why. And in doing so, I would like to give to you just a brief introduction about our family's relationship to education in our school. And so one reason I feel like a fish out of water is because I never taught a day of school in my life. And I never served on the school board. And so you do well to ask, what are you doing here? And I think that's kind of what I asked Brother Jonas when he first approached me about this. And so that's just the way it is. In some ways, I think I might have spurned the Spirit of God in my younger time by not taking the opportunity to teach school. I'm not sure, but that's past, and we'll go on from here. But I would like to say that I did serve as a treasurer in our school for some over 22 years, and last summer I was ordained to the office of minister, and so this treasurer responsibility was passed on to another brother. In those 22 years, I certainly had a firsthand view of school and of what goes on there. Another thing, I've had school at our supper table for over 24 years, meaning that we have three children. We saw them through, all three of them through school, and we have certainly enjoyed those years. And since then, since the children were through school, each one of our three children has taught school. And I just really appreciate that they were willing to do that. And our oldest daughter taught in a home school there at Church School of Pilgrim for, I think it was 3 years. Prior to that, she was a teacher's aide. I'm not exactly sure the time that all of this entailed. And our son taught school in Belize for 4 years. That was a very stretching experience for him. And as we as his parents, as his father, sit back and watch that experience, and we visited him several times, we're glad to be able to do that. Currently he's at Bald Eagle, still teaching boys. And our youngest daughter also has not been out of school since she started kindergarten. She moved from her high school experience into a teacher's aide, and she served in that capacity for a couple of years, and currently she's on her third year at home there. And I'll say this, she helped me with preparations for this topic and the workshop that's following. I really appreciated her input. My wife, Ellen, has drove school bus for 10 years. We finally sold the buses. And then I remember one evening we were sitting around the living room talking about the fact that we're needing a kindergarten teacher, and someone said, well, why don't you do it? Well, she did. And she's been in school ever since. She's our special education teacher. And she's had lots of interesting experiences and I'll just call it interesting experiences. And it has been a growing experience for all of us, for our family. We have we hear names at our table that probably a lot of families don't hear. We have seen writers and read writers and discuss topics that some people don't think about because of the things that have come up in the course of the years that she was working with children who have learning difficulties, and she's been in that for, I'm not sure, 8 years or so. I'm not exactly sure how long it is. And so we're happy to share with you all today some of the things that we have learned. And in doing so, we also want to learn from you all. And we've been looking forward to that, to hear from you. I want to say that in the workshop following, I'd like to open it for questions from you who will be attending that, for questions about, and also input, not just questions, because we don't have all the answers. It seems like we have very few answers sometimes. But I'd just like to open for questions, comments about concerning special education, especially as it relates to learning difficulties and disabilities, resources that you use, methods, techniques, all of that. So I just want to say that now to give you some time to think about that, and we certainly want to take time for that. Just a couple of scripture verses to open this subject about meeting the special education needs of the students. Jesus, it says in Luke 2:52, he says, Jesus increased in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and man. I've often marveled at the fact that Jesus is a model teacher. And if we have questions about teaching, we can go to Jesus. We have example in the scriptures of his teaching, and I think there's some valuable lessons there for us. And I think he was also the model in emotional and social development. And I don't know exactly how all of that relates with this passage, but it says here that he increased in wisdom and in stature and in favor with God and man. And I think that's significant. Another time Jesus said like this, in Matthew 25:15, unto one the parable of the talents, unto one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, and to another 1, to every man according to his several ability, and straightway took his journey. And when we think about children and special education, the needs that they have, God is the one who gives the talents. God is the one who made them. God is their creator. And another verse points this out in 1 Corinthians 7:7. But every man hath his proper gift of God, one after this manner, another after that. And so we need to accept that. I appreciate Jones's comments about the fact that, we write the curriculum. And if the child doesn't receive it, what are we going to do about it? We have to find some other alternative. But God made that child. God created that child. And it's so important that we remember that. And when we do, it'll certainly help us in our situation. Each child has unique gifts and abilities given to him by his creator. And just as each child is different from that of another child, each student has different learning styles as well. And some can be incorporated under one umbrella, others just don't quite make it there. So just some thoughts of introduction there. I'd like to, as I have time, I'd like to look at the a number of different aspects of this subject. I was asked to talk a little bit about the history of our special education program at our school. And I just want to say that we really have some problems with that, stating it like that, because we certainly don't feel that we have arrived, but we have many, many things to learn. And I know that there's lots of resources out here that we can learn from, but we need to start somewhere, and so we're willing to get in there and get started. Also, I'd like to think about the terminologies about handicaps, just a couple of thoughts about that. I'd like to talk a little bit about recognizing the worth of a child. like to talk about the cause and effects of neglect. The neglecting special education is what I'm thinking about. I'd like to talk about parents' emotions when they come to the understanding that their child has special needs. And because there are emotions involved in that, I'd like to also just give a couple of things to the teachers on how to deal with stress. The stresses of the job is what we're thinking about. I was just certainly appreciated the message in the songs that we sang about the shepherd and how that the shepherd fills the needs of the parents. The teachers, the parents too. But we're thinking primarily here about the teachers. And also on the teacher's perspective, oh master, let me walk with thee. And, you know, that applies, those messages apply to many of our lives, probably all of our lives, we can identify with that. So far as our special education program, if you want to call it that, our first experience with this was some years ago. There was a Down syndrome boy born to a family in our church, and as he came up into, I don't know how old he was, probably six or eight years old, I'm not sure how old he was, that he attended our school for a time, and our secretary and teacher's aide worked with him, and and he was also in the regular classroom some, and I'm not exactly sure how all of that went. He moved on, and then with time, a child also started attending our school from one of our church families. He has spina bifida, and I wanted to give a definition for this term because I wasn't really familiar with it. I knew that this is what it was, but I didn't know what it was. But the dictionary says a congenital defect characterized by imperfect closure of part of the spinal column. And he had some very, very delayed learning issues. And so his parents chose to send him to a church school instead of to programs that he could have gone to in public school. And so that put us in a position that we needed to do something for him. And we wanted to. And so we did work with the county school system for a time, but eventually that was all dropped. There was a sister in the church, I'm not sure what her position was at the school, but she worked with him for a time, and some of this information we got from her, her thought was that this started around 2000-2001 school year, and so that was, 10 years ago, and so we went on from there, and with time, our program is extended to other children who had special needs. Some were very minor, perhaps. Some were more significant. But these students were all students who were struggling. Whether they could just not quite make it, we saw value in having them come to the special education classroom part of the day. Perhaps it was for one whole period. And I guess the thing that I really like, which is really, really is inspirational, is when we can see a child come to the special ed classroom for 10 minutes a day and their grades improve, especially if they're struggling in, say, one subject. Perhaps it's in math, or perhaps it's in reading, perhaps it's in spelling, something like that. One of the basic subjects is what we're looking at mostly. And we see improvement, significant improvement. That's really encouraging. And but it's amazing what can be done with the right strategies and if it's practiced consistently and everyone's willing. But I want to be careful that we don't overstate achievement because all of this is a gift from God. And I'd like to talk about that some more later on, too. We've also had some issues with speech therapy with some children in our church. Our county schools had a fairly good program at one time. I don't know how it is now, Some of the children went there for a time, some quite young, others were older, but they had something that helped with this problem. Our newest venture, I think this spring, we're planning that a hearing impaired child will start our school. This is a new thing for us, learning how to work with this. I'm sure that you all will hear a lot more than what I'm able to offer about that, so I'll just let that go. We've had students tested by teachers and people who are trained in testing for learning disabilities, and we were able to implement some of their suggestions and go from there, build on those, and that's been helpful. And it has helped these children to, when you follow the recommendations, to achieve a certain degree of academic success that they would not have otherwise. So far, we have not had any of our school staff take professional learning disabilities training, but our teachers have taken initiative to go to workshops, to classes, to read, to study, look into some of these things, and so we've really grown into what we have, and it is a growth process, and I think you all will all find it that way. You don't just go out and hire a special education teacher. It generally doesn't happen that way. I don't think it didn't for us. But anyway, that's kind of the sum of, in brief, of what we've been doing. One thing that's interesting about the term spina bifida, I think this, what I'm going to say, reflects on the topic of special education as a whole. And perhaps some of you might smile at what I say and think in your mind that, well, you're wrong. But when I went to the dictionary to find the meaning of this definition, definition for this word, this term, I pulled down from my shelf a second college edition of Webster's New World Dictionary, and I looked in there, and it wasn't there. Spina bifida was not in that dictionary. 1974, copyright. And I thought, well, the condition has been around before that. And so we had a newer dictionary on the living room on the bookshelf, and so I went and got it and looked, and yes, it was there. And so I copied this definition. And I looked, and this was also, I thought, well, this is probably a better dictionary, but it was the third college edition of Webster's New World Dictionary. And its copyright was 1994. So in that 20-year time span, this word came into the dictionary. Before that, it might have been a medical term. It came into another type of a dictionary. But I think in that time, special education has gotten the attention of the public more than what it had back in the 60s and 70s. I don't know whether that's significant or not, but I found that to be interesting. Just some thoughts about special education and some of the things that we'll be sharing today is a compilation from many people and many sources. And it is certainly true that we build on what other people have done. We stand on the shoulders of many, many other people. And it is especially so in the subject of special education. Another thing that I want to mention is that our emphasis, our focus at home has been largely on learning disabilities and struggling learners, slow learners, whatever you want to call them. And so when I was preparing this topic, I wanted to try to be careful that I don't focus too much on those, that aspect, but make it more inclusive. Because special education covers other things as well. It covers things like, lost my place on the notes here, but it covers things like hearing and sight impairment, autism, dyslexia, struggling learners, learning disabilities of various kinds. And so a lot of these principles and ideas can apply. A learning disability is any of several conditions believed to involve the nervous system, and then it affects our skills in reading and writing. Learning challenge is a term that we use at home sometimes, that it calls for special effort or dedication. And a handicap, of course, is something that hampers a person, disadvantages him, and makes things more difficult. It's a hindrance to him and so forth. A handicap can be physical, it can be emotional, and it can be intellectual, any of those three, and possibly others too. One thing I'd like to stress is that most students with learning challenges are average or above average students. They are average or above average students. And another thing that happens is that many times or sometimes in the past they've gotten labeled because they couldn't do grade level work in the regular classroom. And if we have time, I'd like to talk about that some more. Quoting from a Robert Doman, he was some information I found. He's a psychologist, I think. He says a learning handicap affects the way children of average to above average intelligence receive, process, or express information, and lasts throughout life. It impacts the ability to learn the basic skills of reading, writing, and math. Basically, what I said there. Special education is not about breakthroughs and miracles. A lot of times when you get into this thing and you've learned it too, is that it is small victories, small progress, just incremental things sometimes. Sometimes you can make dramatic leaps, sometimes you can make a dramatic showing, but generally, by and large, it is the small victories you notice and take note for that. And celebrate even small accomplishments. Recognize them for what they are and the worth that they are. A quote that my wife picked up, the goal to challenge but not to frustrate. Challenge but not to frustrate. And that's a very provoking thought there. I think we can understand that in special education, there are three groups of people that work together, the parents, the school board, and the teachers, and these three work together for the good of the student. And we need to remember that this is a group. This is something that everyone has input into. Not any of them can do it on their own. That's why they need each other. And we can't leave, in a Christian school, we can't leave any of that out either. The teacher needs to know the student's needs and how the student thinks. She needs to understand how the parents perceive their children's needs, understand where the parents are coming from. And the parents and the teacher both need to understand and recognize the teacher's limitations, because it's not about miracles. Teachers can't do miracles. As much as we wish they could, teachers are not miracle workers, and so we need a good school board to just overlook all of that and to keep everything flowing and working smoothly. Just like to give a couple of thoughts about learning disabilities, and in these comments we can also apply them to other handicaps like physical handicaps, whether it is dyslexia or autism or ADD or ADHD, ADHD, whatever. It's these things apply, and at least for the most part. A learning disability, and I'm going to use the term disability, learning disability, because that's the source that I got it. That's the way I got it. A learning disability is not due to environmental, cultural, or economic disadvantage. It is not a hopeless situation, the writer said, so that gives comfort and encouragement. A learning disability is present in about 10% of the population, and it occurs in individuals with average to above average intelligence. And we found that statement in a number of different places about the intelligence level of the students. And it's important for us to keep that in mind, that they are average to above average for the most part. Just another comment about what a disability is not, what it is. A disability is a disorder whose impact is significantly reduced when solid coping skills and strategies are developed. And basically what that means is that if we can give them good tools to use in life, they can succeed. Not just survive, but they can succeed. And so that's important to remember. Give them solid coping skills and strategies. We hear about adults who never learned to read. Some time ago, I don't know where it was, I read a story about a businessman who came to somewhere, and he confided in an educator of some level, said, "I can't read." You know, that's shocking and surprising for us, and yet it's very real for some people. How he survived is really amazing. He was somehow cop out of having to read. In his office, he would get his secretary to read for him, you know, that kind of thing. Coerce her, trick her into thinking she's doing him a favor. Well, she was, more so than she realized. But he could not read, and he wanted to read. He was 40, 50 years old. How did he survive that long without reading? I don't know. But there are people who are very ingenious at hiding their handicaps. And there are also people who have acquired phenomenal coping strategies to allow them to function to the fullest. And that's amazing. When you work with these children, you find that if you can motivate them, they have tremendous powers to apply, to learn. If they really want to learn, they'll put a lot of energy into it. And I think they'll put a lot of their classmates to shame with the energies that they apply. If they can't cope with their learning disabilities, what happens to them? I think I want to be careful how I say that, but they consider themselves to be failure, stupid, worthless, and I suppose a good number of them end up in the penal system, which is very sad. I have an uncle who has been said that he can't read a newspaper, at least when he was younger. Somehow, I've tried to find out a little bit why he was that way. I don't know what all the reasons were. It might have been a stubbornness in him that he just got bullheaded about this thing and he decided to be honoring school. I'm not sure. But regardless, needless to say, he didn't learn to read well. And he couldn't barely read a newspaper, if at all. And I think this man has some learning disabilities. I really think he does. I don't think he was so honored that he refused to learn. I think he had some hindrances that kept him from learning. He had no resources to go to. But this man could take a semi into any city on the eastern seaboard and take it wherever it needed to go, but he couldn't read. He could also build a house, playhouse for my mother, for her grandchildren, a little Three Little Pigs style playhouse with a dipped roof and crooked walls and like that, and a cute little thing. And he said, "I can't make another one like it." One thing, he didn't take any measurements; he just made it. He's made furniture and that kind of thing. And so what I'm saying by that is that just because a person has a learning disability, It does not mean that he's stupid, but it means that his skills lie in other areas. Granted, he needs to develop these skills of reading and writing and math and those, because he needs them for life. But he's not stupid, and that's one thing that has really impressed us, that this is the way it is. Recognizing the worth of a child, value that person as a person. Consider him important, and that's so extremely important. We found that come up time and again, both from Christian perspectives and also from secular sources, the value and the worth of a child. Try to understand the child. He's a person with feelings. He wants to learn. And try to understand, try to see into his world. This person needs to be respected and appreciated as a person of worth, both appreciated in the school and also before God. This term, I used it, alluded to it a little bit ago, that it comes from my daughter, and I think it, in some ways, reflects how she views her classroom, her classes, her school room. She said, celebrate this child. And I like that. Celebrate this child. Make the child feel special. And this goes with children with learning disabilities. Also goes with children who have physical handicaps of some type. Anything of this kind. Just value the worth of the child. Another thing that I borrowed some thoughts from Brother Wayne Yoder down in Withville. We had a Virginia school meeting couple months ago, and just jotted some comments down that he made in a topic that he had about exploring God's vision for our schools. And he talked about the fact that academic excellence for children is a misplaced goal. If our only goal is that they should make straight A's, then we've missed it. I think you might have been alluded to that this morning, I'm not sure. But I think it's very true, because not all children are gifted to make A's. What do we want of our children? Whatever their handicap might be, why do we want them to be even with the norm? Why do we want them to be this way on a certain level? Obviously, there are good reasons for that. But perhaps God has something else in mind in his designed creation of this child. And so we need to look at some other things. One is, we're to do all to the glory of God. And the children are to do the best they can for God. And if they can fix that in their mind, it is good for us all to do those things, do the best we can for God. Another thing, God values wisdom over intelligence. And if we look at the meaning of wisdom and intelligence, we can understand the truth of that statement. God values wisdom over intelligence. There was an example made of a student who goes through school making excellent grades, but all through the school years he has some extreme attitude problems. You know, he for whatever reason, he makes the grade, so he graduates. He graduates with honors, as we might do. You know, he gets an award for making this grade. But what about his spiritual development and his social development, his psychological development? And then again, the question comes, is that the school's responsibility? And I don't know. We've had discussion about that. Is it the school's responsibility to develop, help a child to develop socially? Or is that belonging somewhere else? Have to leave that. But one thing that we know is that attitudes that are formed in the school years will invariably carry on into adult life, and so we need to work with that. What are some of the causes and effects of neglecting special education? One thing that we have learned in contact with Bald Eagle and also with Team Ranch in Missouri, is that unstructured homes have a huge impact on children, obviously. I mean, that's a given. Sometimes home life can upset a child so badly that he can't think when he gets to school. That can happen. And so it may not all be, the problem may not all lie with the child. It might also lie with some other sources. One day, Robert, our son, called home on a weekend when he had off, and he said, "Mom," he said, "how do you teach a 12-year-old boy to read?" And she said, "12-year-old to read? Can you read at all?" I think he said no, didn't he? I think the boy couldn't read at all, very, very little. Well, here at camp, he was supposed to be doing some schoolwork. How can you do schoolwork if you don't read? And so, I'm not sure where the boy is at with that by now. But, you know, why was he there? How did that all develop? There's a lot we could say about that. The quote was given, "A handicapped child's worst enemy is an ignorant adult." And it might be true, you know, when we who are supposed to be caring don't understand or don't care, or we don't, maybe we do try to understand, perhaps we do care, but perhaps we don't know how. And I guess not knowing how is also a certain level of ignorance there. So we do well to try to learn. There's a poem that I found, the author is unknown. It talks about the frustrations of a learning disabled child, but it can also apply to children with handicaps of any kind. It says, "Can you imagine the sorrow, the bitterness becoming rage, while staring without understanding at another printed page? Watching others learn easily as you slowly die inside, you act as if you care not, swallowing all your pride. Family and friends scorn you, say, you don't really care. Life seems so unfair now with feelings you cannot share. You feel normal and intelligent, but everyone says you're so slow. Oh, if reading could just be easy and the printed word would flow. Lord, send someone to show me. Let me be like those I see, and I'll live to help the hurting, letting blocked knowledge free." I think that speaks to this whole issue. I'd like to talk for a few minutes about the parents' emotions and reactions and responses to learning disabled or learning challenged children, whether it's physical, whether it's in a learning disability or whatever. There are various responses. I'd like to read from a lady called Eleanor Whitehead, and this comes from her from the perspective of a learning disability. She says, "Research conducted by Eleanor Whitehead suggests that the parent of an LD child goes through a series of emotions before truly accepting the child and his problem. These stages are totally unpredictable. A parent may move from stage to stage in random. Some parents skip over stages while others remain in one stage for an extended period." And these stages are as follows, and it lists a number of them. I'd like to just go over them a little bit. But parents do go through stages. And I would like to say that the teachers and the school board members need to be sensitive about that, the stages that children go through, that the parents go through, because, after all, this is their child. This is their child, the product of their hopes and dreams. And when these dreams don't materialize, what are we going to do? And I think we do well to think about how we would feel if we had that situation. If we don't, how would we feel if we did? And certainly You know, when a parent's desires are wrapped up in a child's success, and those successes aren't materializing, we do well to give that some consideration. But a few of the things that this lady mentions about the emotions that parents go through, the stages, she calls it, denial. There's really nothing wrong, and you might say, that's the way I was when I was a child, they'll grow out of it. Or they might blame, you expect too much of him. Or you might have an element of fear. Maybe they're not telling me the real problem, or something like that. Or they might say, will he ever be able to get married? Fear. Envy. Why can't he be like his sister or his cousin? Or they might be mourning. He could have been such a success if it weren't for this or this or this. It might be anger. The teachers don't know anything. You might take their anger out on, you name it. And listen, it might be some elements of guilt about what they did. And she used this illustration. My mother was right. I should have used cloth diapers when he was a baby. And so whether that will work or not, that's up to your mothers to decide. Or more realistically, she might say, I shouldn't have worked that first year. Maybe she shouldn't have. And she might take the attitude that I'm being punished for something and my child is suffering for it. And these are all emotions that parents have. And some are better able to deal with them than others. And she says here that fathers tend to stay in one emotion longer than the mothers do because they're not as closely associated with the child. And so they might be looking at one thing more. Another thing I did not talk about, and I really should comment about it, and that is about classroom relationships with special education children. They really need to have some interaction with their peers. Even though they might go to special education classrooms, they need to have a place to come back to, if at all possible. And they need a place to go for the morning devotions, morning exercises, eat lunch, have story time, take part in programs, class activities that they can take part in. That's very important. And I'm talking about mostly about children who are really not functional on their grade level and need to go somewhere else. But they need to be going there, but they need to have some place to go back to. And so it's been discussion about whether that works to have another perspective is to have the child educated in their grade level classroom, but separately. And there's been discussion whether that works or not. And studies have shown that it doesn't make any difference on the attitude and the atmosphere of the classroom. And I would say that it's probably a good thing if it is that way, some, because from a biblical perspective and from our experience, we find that it is true that children are not negatively affected by having someone with them that has a disability of some kind. And I want to say this, and I want to say it humbly, and I'm thankful that we have not seen a lot of problems with that in our church. And I think it's partly because of the parents' attitudes about it, because the parents have good attitudes, and these reflect to the children. I'm not saying there never was any problem, but it's not that it's been a huge problem in any way. And another thing, the scriptures teach us to forbear in love, consider the weak brother, to remember the golden rule, do to others as you would have them do to us. And the classroom can be an excellent training ground for our future church brothers and sisters, for relationships in the church. When we get to long well in the classroom, children learn to forbear with each other with the various levels of academic achievement. That all helps. It all helps to work together for the good. And so certainly there's a lot there to think about. Teachers dealing with the stresses of their job, take time to be filled so we have something to give. And I think that is very important. Spend time in the Word. Spend time with God. spend time in prayer for yourself, for wisdom, for understanding, for clarity. Spend time praying for the children. Recognize that God has made each individual for a purpose, and for some reason, He has allowed your past to cross into me. He's there for a purpose, and you can learn from that child, and that child can learn from you. Stay positive. Be always open to and willing to look for ways to improve this situation. And never quit trying. Always keep trying. I think a special education teacher needs to be looking at working herself out of a job. Try to work yourself out of a job. And also a vision that I have is that regular classroom teachers could incorporate some things into their classrooms that special education teacher does. And I think there are some things that can be done, and our daughter has been under a lot of influence and from her mother, and she's working on some of those things, and she's, I asked her just yesterday, day before, can you do this? And she said, oh yeah. She's working on some things, and she finds it interesting to see the results, and the children love it too. It's variety, and so it all works. It's a journey of faith, teaching school, and especially in special education. It's not for the faint-hearted, and so I just want to say that God bless you as you evaluate the special education needs in your school. If you're looking for something there, you have a need for it, there's answers for it, there's provision for it, and God will bless you in your search. Thank you.
For more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit the docforlearning.org.